It's the Infectious Groove Podcast, part of the Odd Pods Media Network, recorded from Detroit, Michigan and Jacksonville, Florida. The Infectious Groove Podcast is your source for jammy jams, album reviews, and the best in-depth music discussion. Thanks for joining us. Now here are your hosts.
Hello, you are in fact listening to the Infectious Groove Podcast. My name is Russ, and back with me this week is Michelle, who we try and keep the show positive. And, you know, I don't like when you turn on the news and it's all doom and gloom or anything, but, and actually I didn't even ask if you're comfortable sharing this information with everybody, Michelle, but what's going on with your new phone?
I'm locked out.
Of everything altogether or?
Just Facebook.
So grandma can't get into Facebook.
Grandma cannot.
Hmm. And now you've tried Googling this?
Yeah. And it says that you need the old account to log into the new account, but that's my phone was already factory reset. So that does not.
You know, you got locked out of Twitter once and you just left it for like 6 years. So are you maybe just not going to be a part of Facebook anymore?
I think so.
All right. Well, and then starting like a year from now or whatever, you can just act like a hipster about it and be like, yeah, I got off of Facebook, but like, don't tell people why.
Yes.
Yeah. That'd be fun. All right. Well, Michelle is going to do, as she always does, her absolute best to push through this horrific thing that has occurred to her. And she's going to do her best to push through it and put on a great show and a brave face for everybody. And in this episode, in the second half, we have circled back around to a crowd pick for an album review. And one of our listeners has chosen for us the album Fashion Nugget by Cake to review, which I don't want to spoil the episode too much, but Michelle just will not stop texting me over the past few days about how much she loves this record. So, I mean, can you try at least, Michelle, to like pare down some of the massive really texts you've sent me over how much you love it? Can you at least try to pare it down some?
I can like at the very least promise to cut it in half.
All right. That's fair. So in the second half of the show, we're going to run through the reasons why the listener chose this album for us. And then Michelle and I are going to walk through what we think of the record. So that is coming in the second half. Before we get there, we, of course, are going to share our jammy jams with you. That is news to both the listeners and Michelle at the same time. So before we get into our jammy jams, we, of course, have some feedback to share.
Feedback, Joe.
Don't worry about that. Right. Rock and roll be without feedback.
Our friend Aaron writes in and says, last week was another fantastic episode for my GP. Despite feeling attacked for a minute by Seth, I quickly realized it's not an attack. It's that I'm just actually old. You're right, Seth. They are an old band and I'm just in denial. I guess I have to make the most of it. And last week's episode, Seth, of course, sat in with us to talk about Nirvana versus David Bowie for the song The Man Who Sold the World. And as Seth is prone to do, continued to speak about how I'm old and everything that didn't come out in the last 5 years is old. So that's how we end up with that sort of feedback.
Well, that's exciting.
Our friends over at the Super Media Brothers wrote in regarding David Bowie versus Nirvana and said, I love David Bowie so much, but there's just something about Nirvana's cover that I love more, which a lot of people end up saying. On a side note, Michelle, and I'm not saying this to be funny or put you on the spot, have you ever heard the David Bowie version of The Man Who Sold the World?
No.
Like, or not consciously. Like, you probably, like, you may have heard it, but yeah, right. Well, it's the same song as the Nirvana. You know Nirvana, The Man Who Sold the World, yes?
No.
If I pushed play on that track right now before the second note of the guitar hits, you'd go, oh, I know that song.
Sing it.
Our friend Garrett writes in and says, always a treat when Seth is on. I never heard Kurt say it was a David Bowie song, so I didn't even know it was a cover for way too long. Both versions are great, but I'm more partial to Nirvana, which is what a lot of people really said. And then sometimes I include some feedback that we get on our YouTube channel. And as of the recording of this episode that's coming out the following Monday, our couple of videos ago, I had a video where I shared five jams from 90s country, because it really was a golden era of country. And a fan of ours named Michael writes in and says, to this day, I cannot get through the song Anymore by Travis Tritt without tearing up. Michael, I feel you on that. I am exactly the same way. That's why it was on my list. Then he recommends Colin Ray's In This Life and Love Me because they had an even bigger effect on him. And I told him that I hadn't listened to those in quite some time. And thanks for the tip. And I would go and check them out. And then I don't usually do this for our cover battles, but every so often I'll run a poll on Twitter just to see, you know, what people think, what the general public thinks. And so I ran a poll of who's got the better version of Man Who Sold the World, David Bowie or Nirvana. Nirvana, very well in the lead with 69% of the vote to David Bowie's 31%. So now, Michelle, since you can't remember the Nirvana version and you're pretty sure you've never heard the David Bowie version, I guess just David Bowie or Nirvana in general, who would you pick?
Nirvana.
Okay. I swear to God, I thought your answer was going to be pass.
It should have been.
Right. As we've been telling you, it's not the end of the entire world, but it sure is the end of this show. We are in the middle of our last season, but please don't let that stop you from leaving us feedback. We will be more than happy to read feedback on every episode leading up to the last one. So this being a Michelle episode, this being an album review episode, those two things tend to get people to say things like, I gotta tweet about this right now. So please, by all means, share your feedback with us on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere that you want to, and we will be more than happy to read it on air. And as always, because Michelle's on every other episode, you can say whatever you want about her because she's not going to hear it anyways. All right. Now that I gave Michelle plenty of time, an entire segment to get her jammy jams together, let's move on. Our jammy. I accidentally got myself on a kick this week for my jammy jams of more or less people I've heard of in the last 10 years, like artists that I've come into in the last 10 years, right? And I could be wrong. I know you turned me on to one of these artists, Michelle, maybe two, but the first one out of the gate, and actually I didn't even do this to plug our own content, but we were fortunate enough to interview this gentleman on our show. I don't know, about a year ago or so. And he was just super cool, dude. And I was shocked he came on, and he was super cool on top of that. Was Parker Millsap. And he's the one I know you turned me on to, which I don't know if that came about, like if you got turned on to that from just like the Spotify algorithm or how you got turned on to Parker Millsap.
I don't even remember. It was so long ago.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking way back, like 4 or 5 years ago, like way back. Yeah, that's...
You're asking a lot for me.
I know. We just now got you to the point where you can kind of remember things week to week. But Parker Millsap, for those of you who may not have listened to his stuff, the best way I can describe it is country rockish. You know, he's got some stuff that's singer-songwritery. He's got some stuff that sounds like Jack White. He's got some stuff that sounds like, you know, straight country. But for the last week, I've been listening to just a bunch of stuff that I love from him. The entirety of his third album, and then a bunch of songs I liked from the first two records. And then this is an artist. I can't remember if you turned me on to this artist or not, Michelle. J.D. McPherson?
No.
But I'll tell you what. J.D. McPherson is a cat who, if you are older, like Seth likes to remind us that we are, if you're older and you like rockabilly type music or even more recent version of that, like what Brian Setzer was doing before the Brian Setzer Orchestra, like with the Stray Cats, you cannot beat the first two J.D. McPherson records for just modern sounding oldies, I guess is the best way to say it. Sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Michelle, I feel like his first two records could have come out anytime between like 1956 and 1962 and they would have fit right
Absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I dig those. So we'll put some of those on the playlist. And then the last one, I don't know how either of us came into this act, but I know you and I went and saw them in concert and they were stunningly good. And for some reason, I've been listening to the first record a ton, even though I like a lot of his other material too. But Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, that's an act I don't know how we got turned on to. Could just be that the song Son of a Bitch was every damn where when it came out.
Yeah. And that was, it was a good one.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the album was a good one.
Oh my God, that whole record. There's not a bad cut on that album.
No.
Shake, and Need Never Get Old, Howling at Nothing. I mean, the whole record is just straight fire. So I've been listening to that a great deal. So in any case, it's been for me, the last week has been like, I want to say like more rock focused, but certainly not any rock that sounds like it came out within the last 10 years. All this stuff that I've been listening to, you know, the Parker Millsap material sounds like it came out in the mid 70s to early 80s, as far as like country and country rock goes. And then J.D. McPherson sounds like he came out in the 60s, and Nathaniel Rateliff sounds at the latest like a late 60s, early 70s type deal. So, but I came into all those artists in the last 10 years and I just happened to be listening to all three this week. So those were my jammy jams. Michelle, what have you been listening to?
I have one.
Oh, one. Yeah, but like a singular, not just a genre or a group.
I just have one song. I've been really, you know, digging into this cake. You know how much.
Yeah. Well, please save it for the second half. I know how much you love the record. We're going to have plenty of time for you to talk about it.
So other than my usual, I re-stumbled upon the song and I've been obsessed with it all week. Bright Lights by Matchbox 20.
Oh, it, what a gem.
One of those sleeper songs that, like, I don't know, was it ever a single?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I just feel like it was, they're not even my jam, mostly Matchbox 20. They're just there. But this fucking song, man, it's an earworm. It's, the lyrics are great. I just, it's just been on repeat.
Doug, now that record had, I always get this mixed up. I think Disease was the first single off of that. Either I think I always get it mixed up. Either Disease was the single off their, the first single off their second record, or Bent was. You know what I mean? Like, it's one or the other.
Yeah.
But I think Disease was the first single off of that record. Matchbox's third record being More Than You Think You Are. But Unwell was a single off of that. And,
oh,
and,
yeah. That's
and awesome. Bright Lights was for sure. But have you ever listened to the rest of that record? Mm-mm. Okay. This is coming. I'm the same way you are. I don't dislike Rob Thomas. Dislike
Matchbox. No, there's nothing that I dislike about them.
Yeah. Like, I would, there's not a Matchbox 20 song that if you put it on, I would be like, oh, Jesus, don't play that one. You know what I mean? But like, I wouldn't go and put on their stuff voluntarily a lot. You know what I mean?
Right. Have you ever seen the movie Together?
No. Is it like a boy band parody, or am I making that up?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was on MTV and it was just a boy band parody movie, but the guy was like, we need a name. And he was like, what about Matchbox 20? And the guy was like, that's already banned. And he was like, Matchbox 30.
Fantastic. That reminds me of the Andy Samberg one, the Lonely Island movie, the pop star Never Stop Stopping. It's the same thing. It's a parody of a pop star movie. It's just absolutely.
I didn't even know that existed.
Oh, it's on HBO Max or Showtime or something. I promise you, it's absolutely worth watching. It is.
You want to know what, is that I like a lot of parody movies. Just Spinal Tap is not good.
So back to Matchbox 20, their third record, More Than You Think You Are. And did you say? I know I asked you, and then we kind of veered off. Have you ever listened to the entire record?
No.
Okay, if you like Bright Lights, there's more where that
came from. I like Unwell. I like Bent.
Yeah.
I like Disease.
First, the only song on the record, and I love it, but it, that kind of doesn't go with the record, is the opening track to the album is a song called Feel that is like hard rock. Like like that Brand New moment you had where you were like, this is not brand new.
Yeah.
Until Rob Thomas starts singing on that album, you're going to be like, I hit play on the wrong record. Like, it's way, it's like way harder rock. I love the song, but it's way harder rock than Matchbox is. But the whole rest of the record, Downfall, Hand Me Down. Whew. I know you never remember anything from the show and you never follow through on listening to anything, even when you say you're going to. Listen to the song Hand Me Down from that same album from the third. And if you like that, and of course you already know you like Unwell and you already know you like Bright Lights. If you like Downfall as well, you are going to love the entirety of the rest of that record. I like me personally, that record came out in, I want to say 03, maybe 04. And I felt about that record that when it came out, like I do about Meaning of Life by Kelly Clarkson, where like they're like Matchbox is never going to top that record ever.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was that old. I thought it was more recent than that. But
actually, this is kind of inside baseball, but do you know why I know that it's that old?
No.
Because it came out around the time that you and I met when we used to work together at Media Play. And I used to
when
make
the. I was
the,
in high school.
Correct. And I used to make the in-store play, right? For Media Play. Yeah. Okay. And Unwell was not a single yet off of that record, but I absolutely love that song as soon as I heard the album. So I put it on the in-store play and like, no, it wasn't a single yet. So like no one knew it. It was just playing overhead. Right. And I honestly don't know if you'll remember this story or not, but you and I were standing at the register one day and a guy came up with like all 20 copies of the album that we had.
Oh yeah. I remember this.
Right. Do you remember why he bought them?
He was dying.
Yeah. Cause the guy was like gonna pass away and he was standing in the store and heard the lyrics to Unwell and was like, I don't really know how he had been like diagnosed, but not told everyone yet. And he was like, this song is going to be the way that I'm going to like talk to people about it. And I was like floored. And I've never, every time I hear that song, I think about that. Like, it's just, you know, cause I mean, obviously I would assume that person passed not long after, you know, or certainly.
Or I'm maybe assuming, not.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, but I mean, we never saw him again. You know what I mean? But I always think of that.
I mean, also Media Play closed. So,
but you know what I'm saying though? Like, I just like every, like that moment made me think about every single time I've ever heard, like when I sing that song at karaoke, I think about that dude. So, having said that, please listen to the song Hand Me Down, because I really think you're going to, if you like that song, boy, are you going to love the rest of the record.
Okay.
It's such a good album. But I do love the fact that even though you only had the one Jammy Jam, it led to like that whole big discussion about Matchbox.
I forgot it even existed until it came. I heard it. Was it
I was going to ask how you came into it again.
I cannot be certain, but I'm 90% sure I heard it at the grocery store.
Ain't that about a bitch, by the way, now where like you're like this is my jam, and you're like, oh no.
Oh, we're not jamming out at the grocery store.
Yeah,
got it.
I know.
Like, I'll go.
Oh, come on, man, my jams are playing at the grocery store now, damn it. It's like catch me standing in the grocery store like, oh, Seth was right.
Damn it.
Yep. Anyways, we have had some fun talking through a little bit of feedback and talking through our Jammy Jams, and I'm not going to be able to hold Michelle back any longer. She is going to want to talk for at least another hour about how much she loves the album we are going to review. The album in question is going to be Fashion Nugget by Cake. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes and work through that review. You are listening to the Infectious Groove Podcast on the Odd Pods Media Network.
Hi, I'm Tina Jaramillo.
And I'm Hillary Doherty.
And we host the Muck Podcast, where we discuss the dark and sometimes weird true stories in American politics.
Hey, Tina, did you know that Elvis crashed the Nixon White House for the sole purpose of getting a DEA badge, and it worked?
What? Or how a gun control advocate senator out of California engaged in gun trafficking with notorious gang leader Shrimp Boy?
Shrimp Boy, I remember him. Okay, so, you know, we cover all of that and more from maladies, madness, mischief, and murder in U.S. politics.
And we also host a bi-weekly interview segment called Lil Muck.
We interview politicians, journalists, activists, and others who share their experiences in politics.
Find the Muck Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and check us out on social media at the Muck Podcast.
Hey, you there. We've got a question for you. Are you tired of clickbait stories and the loudest voices driving discussions in culture and entertainment?
If so, I'm Dylan.
I'm Kendall.
And I'm Corey. And we host the podcast From the Middle. We're middle-class guys living in the middle of America, in the middle chapters of our lives, with points of view somewhere in the middle.
We take a more reasonable and centrist approach in our discussions, covering genres like comedy, culture, entertainment, and interviews with really interesting folks like business owners, comic creators, doctors, news anchors, New York Times best-selling illustrators, professional stand-up comics, and more. We really value a relaxed and conversational podcast, one that we hope is so fun and laid back, you'll forget you're not actually hanging out with us.
So search at From the Mid Pod, just like it sounds, or check us out everywhere you can find podcasts.
We are back. It's Russ and Michelle on the Infectious Groove Podcast. In every third episode of the show, we come around to an album review. And every third album review, we come around to letting an audience member pick the album that we're going to review. So this week, we have had picked for us by a listener of the show the album Fashion Nugget by the band Cake. Every time we do this, I tell you a little bit about the record, and then we tell you the reason why it was chosen for us. So we're going to go through that before we get in depth about our thoughts on the record. Fashion Nugget is Cake's second album. It was released September 17th, 1996. It was certified gold shortly thereafter in December of 1996. There were several singles off the record, but The Distance and Cake's cover of I Will Survive were the most successful singles. The album did go on to be certified platinum in 1997, so there was quite a bit of success. I didn't look too deep into Cake's numbers, but I have to assume that this is by far their most successful record. I know that they had various points of pop culture prominence after this, things like Short Skirt, Long Jacket was a big hit, and I think ended up being the theme song for the show Chuck on NBC. But I don't believe that they had any record that came close to this level of success. As for why this was chosen for us, our listener Jamie writes in and says, this record should not work. The lead singer doesn't really sing, and he always sounds bored and sarcastic. The guitar player is kind of spastic. The lyrics to most songs seem at first listen lazy and uninspired. Nobody was asking for a cover of I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor in the mid-90s, let alone Perhaps by Doris Day or Sad Songs and Waltzes by Willie Nelson. All of that said, I love this album. Somehow the album is much greater than the sum of its parts. The track listing is great, the rhythm section is on fire, and I'm a sucker for a horn section. It's self-depreciating, it's funny in places, it's really unique for the time. The whole thing is so quirky without the feeling of really trying too hard to be quirky. James goes on to say that his jams for the record are Frank Sinatra, The Distance, Daria, Race Car, Ya-Ya's, I Will Survive, Stick Shifts and Safety Belts, Perhaps, and Sad Songs and Waltzes. James clocks in with one stinker of She'll Come Back to Me. He gave it an overall rating of 8. He said he would recommend the record, especially with someone who wants to hear something that's both very mid-90s and not very mid-90s at all. He says as far as purchase goes, he did buy the record on CD. He refused to pay the insane price that it was at on vinyl for a very long time, but as soon as it was reissued on vinyl, he purchased that as quick as he could. So that is a rundown on the record and the person who brought it to us and why and their thoughts overall. Now we're going to get into the portion of the show. It's going to just take way too long to get through because a lot of times we don't talk a lot about what happens off air on the show. There's kind of a lot of behind the scenes stuff and things that go down. And if Michelle texted me once this week about how much she loved this album, she must have texted me, 15, 20 times. It got to a point where I had to just mute your phone number for a bit. Cause I was like, I just can't keep fielding these texts. You know, Michelle just wouldn't stop texting me about how much she loved this album. And, you know, I just said, look, this is too much. I can't take it anymore. Save it for the show. As far as best tracks go, obviously our listeners know that I'm being facetious and Michelle, in fact, did not enjoy this record very much. So I'm curious if you, in fact, like, cause there's things like The Distance is like in the Water Supply in the late 90s and all the way through the 2000s, you know, their cover of I Will Survive. So like, I know, you know, of these songs, you just hadn't heard the rest of the record before. So like, do even those two songs qualify as things you liked on here, or was there nothing for you at all?
So like, I was thinking about it and like, well, first of all, I listened to this whole record waiting for Short Skirt, Long Jacket.
Ain't that about a bite in the ass? Like when you listen to Dark Side of the Moon and they don't even talk about needing education, not at any point.
So yeah, I was very disappointed from the get, but,
You were disappointed that the cake song that's on a whole different album
wasn't on this album.
Didn't suddenly appear on this one.
Yes.
Yeah. That's, and I mean, if I'm being honest, we don't like to be rude to a lot of content creators like artists, but that's Cake's fault.
It really is.
Yeah.
So The Distance and I Will Survive were the only two songs that I heard previous to listening to this. Mm-hmm. And at no point in my life would I ever be like, oh, you know, what's a jam, or you know what I haven't heard in a long time, or if we're sitting at a bar, I'm not going to go up to the jukebox and play these songs, but I'm not going to ask anyone else to turn them off. They're just there for me. They're not
as far
great,
as the two that you
bad.
Knew.
The, not, yeah.
Okay.
Which is probably why I never looked into Cake anymore. They were just kind of.
Okay. That's kind of what I was going to ask. So like when you heard those two songs, you were never like, oh, I should check out the rest of that.
Yeah, I just thought I Will Survive was like a goofy cover. And then The Distance, it's just the style of music is not my jam.
Yeah.
So I never really pursued them much more than that. Neither is Short Skirt, Long Jacket, but that's the song I thought was going to be on this record.
But you sure wanted to hear it.
I sure did want to hear it just because I thought it was going to be on this record. So if I had to say if I had to pick jams, it would be those two, but they're not necessarily. They're the top two songs on this record for me, but I would hesitate to call them jams. Like I don't know. I would never willingly put them on.
Oh boy. the moment I heard The Distance, and we'll get into this more in open discussion, but the moment I heard The Distance, I was like, give me more of that. And by the moment I heard it, I mean like late 90s or late 96. As soon as I heard that song, I was like, I would like to hear more of that right now, please. And actually, I have it listed on my best tracks now of the cover of I Will Survive. But when I first heard I Will Survive, I was like, no, don't do that. Like, I didn't want them to do a cover. Like, I didn't want them to become, you know how Alien Ant Farm, everyone on Earth knows them for Smooth Criminal, right?
Yeah.
And I know this would probably pain you to admit this, but the Ataris. everyone knows them for Boys of Summer. Like if you ask 10 people on the street.
I don't recall.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I can neither confirm nor deny. but as soon as I heard I Will Survive, I was like, damn it. This man's going to be known for that. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're just going to be the guys that did I Will Survive.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that that's not the case. Like I know people now who know The Distance who never heard I Will Survive. You know what I mean?
What number record is this?
This is their second album. So I do have that on my list, but I think it's kind of a reactive thing. Like if their cover of I Will Survive had gone on to be the only thing they would known for, I wouldn't probably have it on my list. But since it's like a thing that not a lot of people ended up knowing about, then I'm comfortable with putting it on my best track. So The Distance.
Now, since you were cool and you knew it before a lot of people, you can put it on your list.
No, it's not that I knew it before anybody. It's that I'm glad that's not the only thing they're known for. Like I would say in my opinion, nowadays, they're probably way more known for Short Skirt, Long Jacket than they are The Distance.
Oh, yeah. I would have to assume that if I looked at Spotify, I bet that song has more plays than The Distance.
Yeah, probably. I didn't even think to look at that. That's a good idea. But so for me, I had on this particular record, seeing as Short Skirt, Long Jacket is not and never was on this record, I had for my best tracks, I had The Distance.
Oh, we're wrong.
Really?
The Distance has 169 million listens and Short Skirt, Long Jacket has 105.
Wow.
So it has like 64 million more listens.
All right. We stand corrected. But my best tracks on the record, I had The Distance, Frank Sinatra, I Will Survive, and Friend is a four-letter word. And that's what I had for best tracks. I there's nothing I dislike on the record. We'll get in there. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I mean, for me, those are the first four songs off of this record. Like if I was putting together a playlist, I would play those before anything else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So now this, in all seriousness, this is probably the part that's going to take Michelle the longest to get through. And it is where we list our stinkers. And I'll go first on this. Honestly, I don't have any stinkers on this record. Now that I'm
not kind of, a damn one.
Well, I'm kind of reversed on you, right? Where you were like, there's nothing on here that I would say like is a jam, right? But there's nothing that you is, I don't know. There's nothing good enough. Like there are songs you can tolerate, but you would never call a jam. Right. So with this, for me, this whole record is cake being cake. Like there's not a song you hit where I go, oh, well, I don't like that. Cause everything on it's the same style to me. So I don't like, for me, if I was going to have one stinker, I'm going to have 12 or 14. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. It's a lot of the same.
Yeah. Which, for me is a good thing, which we'll get into in a little bit here, but let me put it this way. If I was going to put on this record, which I have many times in my life, this is just something I let play through. Like there's no point on the record where I go, oh Jesus, this song.
I literally have never heard you talk about cake. I didn't even know that you knew this record.
Remember how James was talking about how he never bought it on vinyl because it was outrageously expensive? I used to own this record on vinyl.
Well, you own a lot of records.
It was the only Cake album I ever owned on vinyl, but it was the one. Yeah. I mean, who's to say? I have so many records. Who's to say? So, I mean, there's nothing on the record I dislike at all. I mean, I guess if I'm going to have a stinker, it's the fact that it didn't have, Short Skirt, Long Jacket on it.
Can that be a stinker?
Yeah. I'm sure you'll add it to your list. So, Michelle, get it on. Let us know what are your stinkers.
When I opened with Frank Sinatra and I was like, all right, like, whatever, it is what it is. And then The Distance came out and I was like, okay, maybe this isn't going to be so bad. And then that's where it went downhill.
Maybe this isn't going to be so bad. It's, I know we've made this joke over the years on the show, but like, I want that on a hype sticker. like Rolling Stone, 4 stars, Spin Magazine says it's a revelation. And then just in quotes, maybe this won't be so bad. Infectious Group Podcast.
It's not the worst thing I ever heard.
So from the third track on, oh boy, it's all downhill.
Yeah, and then I got to Race Car Yayas, and that's when I texted you, and I was like, this is not.
So you gave it a full 3 songs before you texted me to tell me that you hate.
No, Race Car Yayas is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were saying like you heard Sinatra, then
no,
The Distance.
So then I was like, these are not great. Like I kept waiting, and then I kept waiting for a Short Skirt, Long Jacket,
which is so rude that it never happened.
And then Race Car Yayas came out, and I was like, what is happening right now? And then I thought that you were gonna say the same thing as I did, and then you just were like, okay.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I tend to like tons of different types of music. I don't know if you've, if that's something you're familiar with or not, but it happens.
I don't even know what music is.
You have proven that for the last 3 years repeatedly. So as we move into open discussion, and it's funny, some of these points that I have on here are is kind of speak to the shock that you had when I said, you know, I love this. And you, like, our listeners should know by now, like, when you and I are being funny and when we're being genuine. And that was like genuine shock when you were like, what? Like, surprised that I like this record. I love it because it's so different. You got to remember, this came out in the middle of 96.
Oh, I'm trying to be cool.
No. You're killing me. You know, in 91 to 93 was just completely overrun with the birth and continued rebirth of everything grunge. And I wasn't sick of it at all, but there's, you know, just like people felt about hair metal, where, like, you know, really birthed around 85, 86. And then by like 89, people were like, got it, hot chicks and drinking and partying. You know what I mean? Like, people were like, yeah, you know, that's kind of how I was by the time 96 rolled around. Like, you know, you get a couple of Soundgarden albums in, a couple of Chains albums in, a couple of brilliant records from Nirvana, some brilliant work from Pearl Jam. And, but by 96, I'm like, Jesus Christ, everything can't be sad. Like, all the time. You know what I mean? Like, good
can't
golly.
Rain all the time.
Yeah. So, oh, nice Crow reference. Did you ever watch that movie?
No.
Well, you should. That, did you mean to quote the Crow just now?
I did.
Okay. But so when I heard this, I was like, yes, this. Like, let me have some fun with music. Like, that's the first thing that I thought of when I heard it was.
So this record came out when I was 10. And I honestly probably didn't even hear about this until I was in high school.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like. Do you think it took that long for The Distance to become a single, like, on the radio? Or do you think I was just, like, really behind?
You were way behind.
Okay.
I mean, the record was certified gold within 2 months of being released, and it was platinum within a year of that. So by the time,
sorry, what?
By the time you were 11, you know, what's funny is people who listen to the show would have heard me say all of that already in this half of the episode. I covered that already. The fact that
when you were breaking up.
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. You know what? That's fair. Yes. The listeners wouldn't know this, but, one of our internet was screwing up during that. So, I recorded that whole part on my end and Michelle probably didn't hear it. So yes, that's totally fair on your part. You probably didn't hear me say all that. So yeah, but the record was platinum within a year of being released. So you would have just been behind.
Yeah. I can honestly say that I don't think that my parents were playing a lot of cake when I was probably 10 not. Years old.
And it's not even one of those things too, where, like, I feel like if your folks had heard, you know, the Ataris do Boys of Summer or something, it's like close enough to the original that they would be like, oh, I get that. Whereas, like, I Will Survive, I can see your mom being like, no. Yeah. Like, I do not like this version.
Also, I think that this is one of those records where, I remember when you told me that the Violent Femmes, what's that one record?
The first Violent Femmes record.
The one that came out when I came out before I was born, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was absolutely floored. Like, I would have, if you would have gunned to my head, asked me that before, I would have been like, I don't know, 98.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because I'm not kidding. I didn't have this in my notes, but I was going to talk about when you said, like, how you came into this record so much later. I was going to mention the Violent Femmes and the fact that this record has legs like the first Violent Femmes record did.
I definitely hear that when I was listening to it. I wanted it to be more Violent Femme-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, it leans too much to ska for me to like it.
Yeah, which I guess I can see you being surprised that I like this as much as I do, because I am known for ska as one of the very few genres that I just have a hearty no thank you.
Yeah, and this isn't like straight up ska, and it definitely has its, you know, the trumpet solos were a bit heavy and whatever, but it's definitely, it walks a fine line. And I don't even mind regular ska, but it's just the combination of the yell singing and the ska that I can't get into.
No, I hear that.
But I'm more shocked that you like it, to be honest.
you like want to have a real long talk about that.
But, yeah.
Well, you know,
hurt you?
Let me say this. I made a point a couple weeks ago during my Jammy Jams, and you were kind of like, nah, it wasn't that you didn't understand me. You were just kind of like, that's a weird thing to say. So I was talking about how when I listened to that Lil Yachty record, I listened to it like a lot, the new Lil Yachty, and and I wasn't even sure if I liked it yet, which, by the way, update, still unsure, but I have listened to it more. But that's how this record was for me. When I first heard Fashion Nugget, I was like, I don't know if I love this or hate this, but I do know it's different than something, anything I've heard in quite a while.
So even going back, listening to it now, you get the same feeling, because I feel like I've found other things in growing up where I'm like, this is different enough from like the pop punk scene that I'm into that I really do enjoy this. But then if I go back and listen to it now, I just feel like I was being angsty and was like, oh, this is cool and this is different and I like it because it's different. And then now I'm like, I think that's the only reason why I like it.
Let me say this. There's a lot of records that came out in 95 and 96 that I haven't listened to probably since that year. And I go back to this one quite a bit.
So that's a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me.
So I think I'm on an island for this one.
Given the sales of the record and how much, and like I say, the reason I made that comparison to the Violent Femmes is because, you know, the Violent Femmes self-titled album came out in the early 80s and kids in the late 80s were discovering it. Kids in the early 90s, mid 90s, late 90s, 2000s. Today, people are still discovering that Violent Femmes record. And for whatever reason, absolutely, Fashion Nugget is the same way. Like, you didn't even hear of it until 5-6 years after it had already passed the solid platinum.
Yeah.
You know, and then here today, I mean, you don't get 164 million listens of it, at least the one song, without having legs to it. You know, like people talk.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so the only other thing I wanted to mention, and this, I rarely do this, but I want to bring Weird Al into this because I don't know if you know this, Michelle. You may know this. You're a pretty big Weird Al fan. So everyone knows Weird Al for like the parodies, right? Like the straight, like Amish Paradise is Gangster's Paradise and so on. But he does a thing on every record, which there's an actual term for, called pastiche. I always call it style parody, where he does songs that just sound like the, like it's not a direct parody of a band, but it just sounds like that band, right?
Yes.
He has one that he does of Cake that you have got to hear. It's called Close But No Cigar, and it sounds like every single Cake song all at once, like every single record, every song.
Like if you had AI recreate a Cake song, it would be this.
It would be, yes. And it's just because he's Weird Al about it, you know, the chorus is like close but no cigar, you know. Like, it's just like, it's just wonderful. And of course it's got the I forget what that instrument is that they use in a lot of Cake songs, like the rattle sound. And of course, it's chords. It's got a killer bass line. Weird Al sings it like he's falling asleep.
That's your favorite.
And there's horns and everything. It's just fantastic. Like, it's, I really like, the reason why I bring it up is because I think that what Weird Al does with those particular songs is like super duper underrated. You know, because if they don't hear it as exactly the song they already know, then they just don't really listen to it. So anybody who's listening to this, and including, I don't even know if James, the person who gave us this album, knows about it, but look up a Weird Al song called Close But No Cigar, and inside of 30 seconds you'll be laughing, especially if you love Cake. Like, you'd be like, yeah, holy crap.
I feel like that's almost harder than to just make up lyrics to an old song, like the same melody, but it's to encompass an entire band or singer's sound into one song is quite impressive.
I mean, while we're on the topic, I'll throw two more out there that kill me. He has one called CNR that's about Charles Nelson Reilly, and it sounds like every White Stripes song in one. Like, I mean, it is perfect. And then he has another one called My Own Eyes that sounds like every Foo Fighters song, like in one. It's just perfect. So anyways, Close But No Cigar by Weird Al is one I wanted to throw out there, because I think he did it around the time that Short Skirt Long Jacket was big. But it literally sounds like every Cake song at once.
Maybe that's why. Let me look. When did that song come out?
What, Short Skirt Long Jacket?
Oh, so I think that's like Comfort Eagle, which is 2001. So I bet that's how I probably heard Short Skirt Long Jacket first, and then The Distance and I Will Survive after that. Okay.
So, yeah. So what happened was Short Skirt Long Jacket was big, and then you were like, I'm going to go listen to their older stuff. Is that how it happened?
No. I probably downloaded a Napster song and it was
right. Yeah. You downloaded Short Skirt Long Jacket and it was just The Distance.
Over and over and over again.
Right.
That's how I figured it out.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I know your answer to the next question on this list here, Michelle, but I'll ask anyways. Would you buy this album, Michelle?
I would not.
You would not. And if I were to give it to you as a gift, would that be a hearty no thank you?
Yes, that would be a thanks, but no thanks.
I'll tell you, I know how I could get you to keep it if I sent it to you as a gift, because I know you're not going to the record store to exchange it. How's that gift card treating you?
I'm waiting for the right time.
Oh, I fully understand. I would buy this record. I have bought this record several times. I used to collect vinyl in the 90s, and I had an original pressing then. I collected vinyl in the, late 2010s, and I had an original pressing then. I've bought it on CD at least once. Much to the surprise and chagrin of Michelle, I have purchased and enjoyed this record. Would you recommend? Now, see, to me, this is a twist, because maybe it's not for you, but maybe it's for someone else. Is there anyone on earth you would recommend this record to, Michelle?
If somebody came up to me and they were like, you know what I want is singing, talking over ska music with a lot of trumpets, so I would be like...
If a person who describes cake to you but somehow had never heard cake came up
to you. Yeah, I'd be like, guess what I have for you? This is right up your alley.
Boy, have I got a record for you.
Boy, howdy.
You know, for me, I said yes on this. And the reason why I would recommend it to people is for, you know how almost every decade gets pigeonholed, right? Like when people think 90s, mm-hmm. the first thing they think of is just grunge. And what I talked about, like it can't all be doom and gloom. I would recommend this to somebody who's like, oh, 90s isn't my thing, man. It was all Kurt Cobain complaining. I would be like, oh, yeah? That was the whole 90s, was it? You know, like, and I would give, at a minimum, I would give them this record to just have them be like, holy crap, like, this came out
would
in the middle.
Would you also preface it as that, make sure that they know that Short Skirt Long Jacket isn't on that record?
I don't believe that I would feel the need to cover that with them, no.
Okay. Just me, then.
I would say to someone, hey, do you have more than a passing interest in music? And if they said yes, then I would say, then you should hear this record. If they said no, what is music? I would be like, okay, just so you know, the theme song from Chuck is not on this record. So, you know. Now we get to what I'm sure is going to be a cavalcade of fun. It's our ratings. We rate these records from 1 to 10, with 10 being the best. I'm going to get mine out of the way and then just shoo myself to the side for the unholy mess that's going to come down from Michelle. I gave this record an 8. The reason why I gave this record an 8, I generally just say why I deducted points. Like I say, I don't have any stinkers on the record, right? And I don't really dislike anything about how the vocals are delivered. I just don't like that every single song has exactly the same type of vocal delivery, right?
Yeah.
And for me, that's enough to pull 2 off the top and give it an 8. I've rebought this record several times. I've seen the band in concert. I've recommended the record to people, never without a warning. Well, and never with the warning that Short Skirt Long Jacket wasn't on there, which is apparently my bad. But yeah, I just, you know, let me put it this way. Like I say, there's never a point on this record when I put it on where I go, ugh, this song. But when it's over, I would never reach for another Cake record, because I'm like, I'm good on that guy's voice for now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why I'd cut that down from a 10 to an 8 for me. Michelle, are you going to give your first negative by any chance? I mean, we're in the third year. You've made it clear to people that you're out of fucks to give. It's been noticed on Twitter by people that you're out of fucks to give. Are we going to approach the negative territory?
No, I want to give it a 4.
A 4.
So it's not as good as...
Short Skirt Long Jacket.
That, and it's not as good as Pet Sounds. It's a little bit below Pet Sounds.
All right. So, actually, there's the hype sticker. You know, 4 stars from Rolling Stone, must hear Spin Magazine. This is just a little worse than Pet Sounds, Michelle.
A little less good than Pet Sounds. Yeah,
this is a little less good than Pet Sounds.
It's just not my jam, but I can appreciate those other people's jams. I don't think in general I'm really into the whole fun and games genre of music. Like,
oh, we know.
Cool. You said testicles like 6 times in the chorus. I got it. Like,
yeah.
LOL. Like,
yeah, like balls. Lol.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it has its place. Like Bloodhound Gang, I'll listen to the Bad Touch. I will listen to that, but never in my life have I been like, oh, I'm going to listen to more Bloodhound Gang. Like, it's right. Just a one and done for me. Not that all the songs are like that, but like, it's just. The entire genre is just not my jam, but like I said, I obviously other people like it, I guess. Right.
Yeah, it's been proven that other people like it. Then again, every year on our Spotify Wrapped episode, you prove that you don't believe Spotify. So who knows? They could be making that up.
So speaking of Spotify, because we don't have another Unwrapped. So remember how I was complaining
Maybe we can just get together once a year and do that.
So remember how I was complaining that it only plays the same songs over and over again, and like mm-hmm. I that's why it ends up on there. So I think they heard me, because now they play different songs, and I don't want to hear the different songs either.
I've asked this for almost 3 years on the show. I asked this at least once per season. What can I do to help you?
I don't.
What can we do?
I want you to go and search my brain and find out music that I haven't listened to in a long time, and then make that into a playlist.
That is a murky place that I don't want to go.
I know. I did recently, and I don't know, I think they came up on Facebook or something. There was a band called Spital Field. I don't know. They're just like a pop punk bag. Or like maybe had half of one record, like maybe it wasn't an EP. Like I don't even know. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Maybe they did more than that. People are probably gonna light me up on Twitter, but I like one of the songs was playing in the background somewhere, and I like Shazammed it, not really, whatever the Google thing is, and I was like, holy shit, I forgot about that band. And I have been, I guess it's another jam. See, I forgot about that. I've been listening to them because that whole record is good. But I want that kind of thing to happen where it's like, oh my god, I totally forgot these people existed. I would like to listen to that again. So if you that for me, that'd be great.
So there was a couple of thoughts from Michelle on the album that we're here to review, and a whole lot more thoughts and more passion about how and why Spotify can be fixed for her. Thank you for coming to Michelle's TED Talk.
That was more interesting than the album.
Oh boy.
Just kidding, Jamie. I'm sorry.
Good golly, Miss Molly. Those were our complete thoughts on the Cake album, Fashion Nugget, from 1996, which was in fact certified platinum the year after it was released. And we're pretty sure more than a few people have listened to. Next week on the program, we are going to welcome back one of our favorites. It's Dayton from the Docking Bay 77 podcast is going to slide into the second chair here and help me out as we discuss what we think are the top five soundtracks of all time. Michelle, I assume you have to, you would say Titanic is in there.
I actually did. I owned the extended 2-disc Titanic soundtrack. I did really like that. Moulin Rouge is up there. Just in case you wanted to include this next week.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what I'm going to do is clip this audio out and just like disperse it throughout the episode next week.
Yeah, Moulin Rouge. Grease is a good one.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about next week. And I assure you, you will not hear Grease mentioned from me on next week's episode. But we will see what Dayton brings to the table.
The week
after that, Michelle will be back in her chair as we work through the final season of the Infectious Groove podcast. And we continue to and will continue to have 3 YouTube videos for you every single week. So if you haven't yet, slide over to our YouTube channel and hit the subscribe button, because we are coming up on 2,000 subscribers now. We're knocking on the door, which I'm really, really, really excited about. But we still have a ton of fun to have all the way. Well, I guess that's in the eye of the beholder or the eye of the listener. But we have what we perceive to be a lot of fun lined up for you all the way until the end of this season. But like we always say about this time, without music, life would be a mistake. Bye.
Bye.
The Infectious Groove podcast is hosted by Russ Robinson, Kyle Wimple, and Michelle Casalecki. Produced and edited by Russ Robinson. Intro and outro music composed by Chris Kimmel. Recorded with a Rode Podcaster Pro and Rode Pod Mic.